Welcome to EKU 13 podcast, and today I'm talking to Sue Martin, who's one of our experienced EKU writers. She's a salary GP in Oldham and an appraiser, and has written the EKU 13 module on familial breast cancer based on the NICE 2013 guidelines. Hi Sue.
Hi Tom.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Great. How did you find this module?
It was quite a challenging thing to write, I found this one. It's a very, very chunky piece of guidance. There's an awful lot that's probably not that relevant to general practice, and even the parts that are relevant to general practice are actually quite complicated and not that easy to remember. So, yeah, it was quite a challenge.
So I guess part of that, what we're doing as EKUs, we're trying to tease out what GPs really need to know in these guidelines or evidence and trying to give them a bit of help with it. So what were the key messages from the guideline?
Right. Well, I was quite surprised by quite a lot of the stuff in here, because to a certain extent we've been lucky in Oldham because we've got a family history service where patients can actually ring and they can have people who do this all the time sort it out for them. It doesn't impact on us GPs very much. So there were a few things that hit me, really. How common it was. I hadn't realised that breast cancer was actually the commonest cancer that we were seeing. That was the first thing. And I probably realised I wasn't asking about a history of breast cancer quite as often as I should have been. And even now, since I've written this unit, I'm aware of patients coming through the door who are volunteering symptoms before I'm actually getting round to actually asking those questions. So it's the people who are coming in, even young ladies who've got some breast symptoms that you wouldn't necessarily be thinking along the breast cancer lines, that you probably should be bringing that question up. So those are two fairly simple things, I think. But also the rarer causes, I think, of the genetic breast cancers. I've certainly in the past have had one or two queries coming in about what I thought were some really rather odd things. You know, a child in the family's got a glioma. Is that of any relevance? And yes, it is. But it's not something that would necessarily strike you. So you've really got to be quite vigilant, I think, and be quite switched on when you're taking these histories.
And going back to what you mentioned at the start about breast cancer being common, have you got some statistics or figures from the guideline?
I think it was 2010 figures that we quoted in there. I think it was 49,000 women and about 400 men that were diagnosed in the UK in that year. So there's a lot of people.
What is a woman's lifetime risk of breast cancer?
Basic rate, somewhere between about 1 in 8 and 1 in 10. Obviously, that's going to be a little bit higher if you've got a family history. And that's whether or not there's gene mutation in your family or not.
If a patient has a family history of breast cancer, I assume it increases the risk.
It does, yes. As I say, and that's whether there's genetic mutation or not. It's if you've got one affected member, that raises your risk to about 13% lifetime risk. And if you've got two affected members, we're looking at about a 21% risk.
So that's quite a significant increase in risk if you have got a family history.
Yeah.
You mentioned about when to take a family history of breast cancer. Can you briefly go over what sort of cases or patients you would take a history?
Well, the obvious one is when anybody's coming in with breast symptoms, whether that's soreness or a lump. Prescribing oral contraception to women over the age of 35, particularly thinking about combined oral contraception, that's particularly the group you need to think about there. And also with your HRT patients, particularly who are on it long-term or over the age of 50, because that's going to impact on their risk again.
How do you take the family history in primary care? What sort of questions would you ask?
Well, you obviously need to know which members of a family have been affected primarily by breast cancer. You need to know exactly what relation they've been, whether they're female or male. You need to know what age they've had the diagnosis at. You need to know whether it's unilateral, whether it's bilateral. You need to know the total numbers of people involved. And you also need to know whether there are any other tumours involved as well, particularly things like ovarian cancer. That's the big one with BRCA genes. Others can be affected as well, that you might just make you worried that there's something going on, you've got clustering going on. And if you've got odd clusters of tumours at a younger age, particularly things like sarcomas, gliomas, adrenocortical tumours, you should be thinking, could this be a genetic problem going on? If you've got a paternal history of breast cancer, that should really make you sit up and worry, I think, in particular. And a Jewish ancestry as well is highly relevant.
So there's quite a lot of detailed family history there required. Do you always manage to do that in the consultation, or ask patients to bring back, if they're not sure themselves, information about the family?
It can be difficult to cover all that, and to a certain extent it depends on what the circumstances are and obviously how much comes out. It is recommended in the guidance that you have family history taking sheets available to make all this information gathering possible, though they don't actually recommend one. And it depends on the circumstance. If it's someone that you're going to refer off the breast clinic anyway, you probably need a fairly straightforward history, the basics to go in. If it's someone who, yes, you really need to know whether they need referring off just for that, then you need to sit down and take all the details. And it may well be that they need to go away and think about it. They need to go and ask questions of the family to fill in some of these details. And there are also online tools. I think the Opera one is the one that we've linked to on the unit, where they can actually go home and maybe plug that information in and get an answer to come back with, which can help to guide us as to how worried we need to be and how much detail we need to take with that history.
And just touching on those tools, as far as I'm aware, there's no validated tool for primary carers yet.
Not for doctors sitting in their surgery, as far as I'm aware, no. That the Opera tool is purely for a patient to go away and use.
And you touched then just about the criteria for referral. Have you got some of those criteria to hand, on how do you remember those, or how do you utilise those in your day-to-day practice?
I think you would have to try very hard to remember them, to be honest, especially if you're not seeing a lot of patients. I think the best way to do it would be to have an aid memoir to hand somewhere on your system, or to know how to access the NICE pathways so that you could check when you've got a patient with you. But it's basically a first degree female relative with breast cancer diagnosed under the age of 40, a first degree male relative with breast cancer. Those are the easy ones. You can probably remember those. But after that, it starts getting a bit more complicated. So then you've got a first degree relative with bilateral breast cancer, where the first primary was diagnosed less than 50. And then it gets more complicated. So we're going into numbers of first and second degree relatives with either breast cancer and or ovarian cancer. And I think really those you have to sit down and check them off on the list. I actually had a medical student with me when I was writing this unit, and we had a patient in who had quite a strong family history of breast cancer. And even though I was writing the unit and I'd actually written about that the night before, I still couldn't remember it and had to look it up to teach the medical student and to sort this patient out. It's not easy.
I've had one case and I've had to look it up, or they could obviously look at the EKU. It does have it on some of our slides. And I guess what an ideal world would have, maybe an online tool which could be used and validated for GPs, but unfortunately we're not there as yet.
No, we're not.
And obviously after referral, they will go to either a breast clinic or a family history clinic.
I think probably the majority of people will be going to your local breast clinic, where they will get a much more detailed assessment using one of the validated online tools they use. I think it's Boadicea and the Manchester scoring tool that have been mentioned in the guidance. And that'll give a much more detailed idea of where the patient is in terms of risk stratification, whether they're at medium risk or high risk, and then that will guide what happens then to that patient, whether it's just a case of surveillance or whether they need to be offered genetic testing and rather more heightened surveillance.
And even risk reducing surgery in some cases?
Possibly, yeah.
Won't really touch on what happens in secondary care. We do have more information on the module about that. I think important for GP point of views is maybe how to advise patients on lifestyle advice and contraception. So any kind of key take-home messages there?
This is probably more, I think, the thing that people want to ask you about, particularly if they're worried about the risks. So there are some modifiable things that people can do. It's the sort of things we're probably advising people on every day. So weight, certainly in postmenopausal ladies, being overweight, it is known to increase breast cancer risk, but not in premenopausal ladies. Moderate physical exercise does reduce the risk of breast cancer, and that seems to be independent of weight. Breast cancer increases with your alcohol intake as well, so that needs to be moderated. Smoking, there's no definite data either way, so unfortunately we can't tell people to stop smoking because it will reduce their breast cancer risk. Breastfeeding, that we do know reduces your breast cancer risk, and that's independent of the reduction you get with pregnancy. Each year of breastfeeding, there's a reduction of about 4%. In terms of pregnancy, earlier pregnancies are protective, and also the number of children you have is protective as well. So ladies with a higher parity have a lower risk. I think it says it's about a 38% decrease in women with 5 or more live births, which is reasonably significant.
And in terms of contraception and increased risk?
Right. The guidance, I have to say, was a little bit vague on this point, if you read it, but they talk about hormonal oral contraception. Most of what they're talking about is the combined pill. Up until the age of 35, there is no real difference. Over the age of 35, then you do need to start thinking what an individual patient's risk is. The risk of breast cancer does go up with age. If a patient has a family history of breast cancer and they're over 35, they can still have the pill. It's a UK MEC 1, so it's unlikely to do them any harm. But you do need to advise them that their risk of breast cancer is going up, and there is an increased risk of breast cancer while they're on the pill and for about 5 years afterwards. So it's important then to understand that. But they can still have it. If they have a genetic gene mutation over the age of 35, they really shouldn't be taking the combined pill. In terms of the progesterone-only pill, if there's only a family history, there's no problem with taking the pill. It's a UK MEC one. If they're a gene carrier, they can almost certainly still have it as well. It's a UK MEC 2. So that's where the advantages of the method usually outweigh the theoretical or the proven risks.
Great. Thanks for that good summary. What was quite controversial in this guideline was about the chemo prevention, which is, for example, tamoxifen and the recommendations in that. Did you have any information on that?
Well, we have provided some information on that. And again, it's one of these areas that's a little bit confusing. And I think you probably have more information on this than I do. But there is some evidence that ladies who are at increased risk taking tamoxifen for 5 years does significantly reduce their risk. But I understand that the numbers needed to treat are quite high. And you might be able to fill us in a little bit more on that one.
Well, we had a look at this in a bit more detail. And the number needed to treat for actually 10 years to prevent one breast cancer is 42, but most of that benefit is in the first 5 years of taking it. So that's women moderate to high risk of breast cancer. As far as I could get from the guideline, it would be recommended from a specialist centre, maybe who are moderate to high risk and don't want maybe surgery, and tamoxifen could be an option for them. The way I thought about it is a bit like statins, that you're kind of public health intervention with quite a high number needed to treat. And from some of the systematic reviews I read, there was no significant impact on mortality, and there was a reasonably significant number needed to harm in terms of slight increased risk of VTE and also endometrial cancer. So I think we really just have to present the information to women. I suspect what it would be is they've had that discussion with them in a specialist clinic, and then they come back to GPs for the prescription. But I could see there could be a potentially you could see some patients who wanted to discuss it. And I guess it's really very much like a statin-based discussion about the risks and the benefits, because you're really modulating a risk factor there.
Absolutely.
Any take-home messages or key messages that we haven't really covered, or things that you think are really important to highlight?
I think the main thing is to always bear it in mind. There are probably more women out there with a history of breast cancer than we're aware of and who may not necessarily volunteer it. So you should be asking more than you do, and have a link available to the information that you're going to need for those patients who say, well, actually, yes, there is, because it's not easy to remember.
Great. Thank you very much, Sue. Very interesting to chat to you today.
Nice to talk to you again, Tom.
You are listening to Essential Knowledge Updates, or EKU, podcasts from the Royal College of General Practitioners.